Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Super J Cast. I am Joel, joined by David McDonald. It is Thursday, the 12th of September, 2024. And you could be listening to this podcast where, by the time it's finally up on our podcast feed, probably about a month later. This is episode 327. Welcome. Welcome, everyone.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the time capsule. You can open it up and explore what's inside from 1973. I mean, partially it's my fault because I always, what happens is that we record in the afternoon, like the second I can get out of work, and we record, and then like my wife is patient. She gets home and she's just kind of just patiently waiting for me. And then she usually wants to go get something to eat or do something, or we got to go somewhere. So then I come back and I'm exhausted and I'm like, all right, I'll just fucking give these files to Dan. And then Dan will upload. But the problem is that I'm here in the States. He's in lovely London, and the time difference and all that stuff. And then it's just a whole rigmarole. So partially my fault. But I promised y'all that today, as soon as I hit stop.
you seem to have tactfully left out one crucial step of the process there.
I know. There's other things. It's all right. Listen, it's a network. We're on a network. It's a big network. A lot of moving parts. So a lot of vacations. It's all right. Where are we? Vacation all I ever wanted. Hey, speaking of vacation and singing, I forgot to tell you something. And I hope someone's not angry that I forgot to tell you. I was on Andrew Rich's Music of the Mat recently.
I listened.
Did
and
you?
I enjoyed. What a lovely treat and surprise that was.
Ah,
you should have plugged that.
We should have. And it's my fault because I like go on into
it. Don't respect Andrew Rich.
That's not true at all. How dare you? How dare you? I just like when things end, I don't think about things. And I just slipped my mind and I didn't let you know so that you could promote it. But anyway, let's boost those numbers. Let's boost those numbers for Andrew because he does a great job. I love doing this show. I really do. And it was all about music and not even like wrestling music. It was just like local, you know, things from your hometown. I just love doing it. Fun. It's fun. He's a good dude.
I would like to do an episode, Andrew, if you're listening, for computer game music.
Ooh.
So hit me up. I think that would be a really good episode. I think people would be into that.
If it's not...
No relation to wrestling, because yours wasn't about wrestling.
No.
So, yeah.
As long as you do the entire soundtrack to Streets of Rage, I wouldn't have any problem.
Yes.
That is the greatest. Yeah, that is 90s dancey, techno-y fucking greatness. I love that. There was another one that I really liked too. What was the most, was it Shadow of the Colossus? Was that what I'm thinking of with the music?
Yeah, that's got a good one.
Yeah.
Very sort of melancholy.
Yep.
Because the interesting thing about that game is there's no music until you get to the Colossi battles.
Correct.
So for most of the game, when you're sort of traversing this big empty world, there's nothing. There's no music whatsoever. You just get the sort of empty sounds of the landscape. Yeah.
and the horsey.
And it works. It works so well, doesn't it?
I love that game. Here's the problem. It's only on PlayStation, right? I think so, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why I haven't played it well, because I'm a dust off. I have a Xbox and the Steam Deck. So yeah, it's been a bit. It's been a bit. I would play that again. Although, no spoilers. I mean, the game's been out 500 years, right? I mean, it's not like I'm spoiling fucking anything. If you haven't played it, then, well, you know, I won't do it. I won't say it. But it's heartbreaking. It bothers me. And the problem is that you can't get past
that. That is one of the most emotionally resonant moments in computer game history, I think.
I'm right there with you. I swear to you, I'm right there with you. Because
I had to stop playing for a bit. I was just like, no!
Yeah!
No.
Right. I swear to you, I'm looking, I was like a NXT trainee staring at my hand saying, what am I doing? And the problem is that, like, I'm not good at video games at all. So it takes me a while to get past a fucking level. And every time I would set up a marker to kind of save the game, it would always be before something happened. And I would have to repeat it over and over again. And I was like, this is terrible.
Relive the worst moment of your life, right? At infinity.
It was fucking brutal. And I'm like, oh, what the fuck am I doing? This is fun? Who told me this was going to be fun? But it is. It really is. Like, but I will say this. I am the dude that will go on YouTube and be like, well, how the fuck do I? Because a lot of it is, you go into a level and you're like, well, I don't even know what the fuck I got to do. I don't even know what I'm looking for, let alone how to beat this fucking gigantic monster. And I don't have the patience to fucking figure it out. So I'll go online, look to see how it's done. But even if you know how to do it, it's hard. But yeah, like the people who figure it out, God bless, you're like geniuses, because I don't have the patience for that at all. But yeah, I will look there. But it's such a great game. I just like it visually. And again, at the end, you might learn a little something about yourself. All right, what else is going on in the world? Anything cooking over there in Devon?
No. Matthew's got a question, though.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
It says off topic, which is strangely on topic now. Would it be weird for a non-Arsenal supporter to wear an old Arsenal Dreamcast shirt because they love Dreamcast, asking for a friend?
Mm. I mean,
that is that's the glory years of Arsenal. I mean, that Dreamcast shirt was when we won the double. That's what, the 2001-2002 season. So definitely wear it, because not only was it one of historically our best seasons, but also the Dreamcast is the best video games console in history, which was a victim of circumstance, but just an absolute stellar line of games. Is this ever release like one of those mini Dreamcasts that, you know, like they do like the mini Super Nintendo with like 20 pre-built games on it? If they did like a Dreamcast version,
yeah,
I would sell a kidney to get that, however much it cost.
Well, why don't you see?
Great console the Dreamcast was.
Why don't you
see? Not only Shenmue, which, you know, I've spoken at length about how brilliant Shenmue is, but so many great games. Soul Calibur, Crazy Taxi, Power Stone, House of the Dead 2, Sonic Adventure, just games that are. So that was the first console that I bought myself with my own money. That was my bar mitzvah money that I saved up and bought a Dreamcast with that. So it holds a very special place in my heart, because, you know, you get that console at the time of your life where you've got so much free time.
Yeah.
And I just played the absolute shit out of it, and just a great console that's never been matched for me. So yes, buy the shirt, Matthew.
All right. I can't believe I'm saying this to you. And trust me, I don't believe in any form of piracy whatsoever. Why don't you fucking just emulate it?
I think I want to leave the memories alone. I think if I replayed any of those, well, actually, that said, I own a lot of those games, or owned a lot of those games on the PlayStation, but things like Shenmue and Sonic Adventure I definitely had on PlayStation. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know, maybe it was just, it hit just right at a time in my life that I sort of look back on it with the nostalgia, and if I maybe played them all now, it wouldn't be the same and it might spoil it for me. So
okay,
almost want to sort of lock those memories up in the time capsule of my mind. And
all right, but I'm saying maybe it maybe it'll make you feel good. Maybe it'll bring back those memories. You'll be just like, oh, I just remember that. It was fucking awesome. And then you're there. You're instantly transported. You'll hear the load up music. You'll see the fucking graphic. I don't know. You don't do a lot of emulating, do you?
I don't have the time or the energy for computer games, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Because by the time, you know, I get home from work and then I've got to sort all the shit out for the next day, eat my dinner, and then by the time that's all done, it's time to take the kids down, wash them, pajamas, brush teeth, story time, bedtime. And by the time they're asleep, I'm fucked. I've got nothing left. I don't really want to play computer games after that. I just want to lie down and watch YouTube, basically. That's all I've got the energy for.
Right. Can I make a suggestion? Why don't you sell your kids? You know, I'm sure there's a black market for healthy children somewhere, right?
Yeah. To jump back on your previous point, why don't I replay these games? Yes. I think I will, but when the kids are old enough to enjoy them. I think I would really enjoy replaying those games together with the kids and sort of reappreciating it through the lens of their novel experience of it. Because that's what we've been doing with a lot of the Super Nintendo games. We've played through loads of them. We've done Super Mario World, Yoshi's Island, Donkey Kong Country, A Link to the Past, and they love it. They absolutely love sitting and playing those games together, and it's really inspired Esther's imagination, because whenever we play stuff, she'll sort of be walking around for days afterwards coming up with her own ideas for her own game. Like after we finished one game, she was like, I've got an idea for a game called Kitty's World. So she was like using ideas from all the first level, there's going to be a giant chicken. It was just very cute the way it sort of captured her imagination. So yes, I will replay them with the kids, and I think that'll be really fun.
Yeah, I think that's a good deal. They're not like just fucking hand waving you with the graphics.
No, good. Because they don't know any better. They've not seen any modern generation computer games, so I could load up something like, Mega Man or Final Fantasy 3 or something, and they think it's great. They're just enraptured by it.
That's cool. That's good. All right, listen, you got it. You got to figure it out. I don't know why I'm telling you what to do. You got to figure it out. I don't. That's for fucking sure. I don't know. I haven't played in a while. I feel like it's one of those passing, fleeting things that I always do. It's like, fuck.
One misstep. I too much Street Fighter with the kids, because then they started playing a Hadouken game where they'd stand there and shout Hadouken at each other. And that, so it was good. It was cute at first because they were sort of doing imaginary Hadouken fireballs. And then when one of them said Hadouken, the other one would fall on the ground and go,
right.
But then they started actually shoving each other. Oh, no. And I was just like, oh, yeah. If mum sees this, I'm fucked. So
don't show them pro wrestling. Like,
no more Hadouken. No more Street Fighter. Oh yeah. Pro wrestling. That's,
Is that off limits? Like, do you watch it solo?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want them to watch that.
It's probably a smart move. Yeah. I watched this, speaking of thing, rabbit holes.
Certainly wouldn't have them watching the older All Elite Wrestling with people putting syringes in each other's mouths.
Trash bags.
Taking back bumps. On. Yeah, it's disgusting.
It's funny. Ugh, yucky. I saw a little of the online scuttlebutt. Didn't pay much mind. But I just found it kind of hilarious that people were, I don't know, maybe they were just clutching pearls, but like, I don't know. Like, I go back to Terry Funk doing it to Ric Flair back in like early 90s. And it was a bit of a thing because people did complain apparently to TBS at the time. But that was like fucking a million years ago. Like we know it's like, I don't understand why certain forms of simulated violence, like it's okay that a dude goes through fucking a barbed wire or whatever, but don't do the trash bag. I don't know. What's the difference? I don't understand. Whatever. I don't know. It's a weird world.
Yeah, I can never say anything. Having been in Osaka Joe Hall in, what was it, 2019, when, I can't remember whose head it was now, when there was the Ibushi Naito match, the suplex off the ring apron. Yeah. And someone's head nearly came off.
Yeah. It's amazing what people get upset over. Whatever. All right. Look, everybody's Everybody's got their own tolerance level, I guess. But again, it's pro wrestling. People relax. It's not real. And if you, like, and one of the people are like, "Well, my kids, my children, what would they do?" You know, not for nothing. Maybe you should be a decent parent and fucking turn off the TV or not have them there when you watch. That might be an idea. But anywho, I just work here. All right, what else we got going on?
Please talk to us about Kuniaki Kobayashi. Mm. Any memories of him?
Yeah, matter of fact. Well, one was, you know, for people who listen to this show, that probably the name is most familiar with being involved in Liger's retirement dome matches. I mean, he was a guy that was, I liked him, but he was never a favorite of mine, right? In the sense of, like, he was never a guy that I was like, oh, let me go out of my way to get a compilation tape. But, like, all the stuff that he was...
Careful, Damon, careful. You, honest appraisal of a wrestler after they've passed away, you will get absolutely fucking dogpiled for that.
Oh, my bad.
No, joking. Do you know what I'm referring to?
No.
When, you know, Psycho Sid Judy passed away recently.
Yes.
And Rich Craich wrote a really great piece on him about, in spite of his in-ring limitations, that he was just, you know, a great character and everyone loved him. And mm-hmm. he just was able to have a pretty great career, all things considered. And it was just a really sort of loving tribute to him. But the headline was something like the best bad wrestler in history or something like that. So people just read the headline and were like, "Ah, right. Oh, how dare you say that?" Which was just great proof that people don't actually read anything or click links. Right. So aggregators, you shove that one up your ass. But yeah, I'm sorry. I've got us off track there. You were talking.
Well, I mean, not for nothing. I'm always amazed by people who didn't live during the era, like that get bits and pieces of him or people, you know, just in whatever. And it's like at the time, I don't think many people were like, oh, he's tremendous. You know, like he was a guy that was like the running joke was he would take off for fucking softball season. Like you wouldn't see him because he would play in his local softball team. The second thing that instantly comes to my mind with him is the whole fucking trying to beat the shit out of Arn Anderson in a parking lot with a squeegee. Right? Like, it's those kind of things that I remember most. I mean, look, I appreciate the people trying to remember them, people in a positive way. I get it. And I'm not certainly here to shit on the guy, but, you know, I don't know. He's a big guy. That's for sure. He was definitely an imposing figure, but, you know, I don't know. And like the same thing with like Dusty. Like at the time, people were just like, yes, he was definitely one of the bigger stars of the era, but like a lot of that was largely due to his own doing, you know, his own booking, and you know, he constantly put himself over, constantly put himself on top, and it's like, okay, you know, I'm there for it. You know, he was great in the sense of yes, he was a draw, and yes, but he milked it for his own benefit, no doubt. All right, I'm sure somebody will get upset at that, whatever. But a lot of it is like, I guess if you didn't live it, like I feel like the people who were living it kind of like are in the same boat. And then there's other people who didn't live it that just see glimpses and I don't know. I don't want to put fucking people words in people's mouth. That's what I feel. All right.
No, I've completely derailed this
yeah, I know this poor guy. I'm trying to play. Like it's weird because he was in the this middle ground of like to me he was like a guy that let me give you a modern equivalent. How about Kanemaru? In the sense of I don't think anybody goes to bed with a Kanemaru pillow, right? Or has a poster hanging over their fucking wall. But
apart from Tony Khan,
my bad. That is, you know what? You're right. My bad. Aside from Tony Khan, but yet, if you really get down to the brass tacks of it and really get down to the fucking nitty gritty, like you really truly appreciate what the dude has brought and brings, right? And that's kind of my like just off the cuff, off the top of my head kind of thoughts on him. Just remembering him getting tapes and like he was, I don't know if I would even say he was always in the mix. Like Kanemaru is like kind of like my modern day equivalent. Where again, you kind of forget he's there sometimes, and then he kind of dazzles you with just being steady. That's kind of my thoughts on him. Did he do All Japan too? I think he did All Japan too, because I think he feuded with Dynamite there a little bit. He might have, maybe, or Tiger Mask or Masala. I forget. It all blends together sometimes. But yes, that like good, like, all right, I'm not going to repeat myself, but yes, those are my thoughts. But here's the thing too. Do you have a friend that does this? That texts you people who passed away? I don't know why people do that. Why are you texting me that somebody passed away? Like, in the sense of, like, famous athlete X or Japanese pro wrestler X. Like, I don't understand that. I don't understand like, I'm going to find out eventually. And it's okay if it's 5 minutes later, right? You know? Like, it's like, why are you texting me this? I don't get that. Are you that guy? Are you a guy that does that?
I'd never text anyone anything.
And neither do I. Yeah, I've been texting, you're texting all that. I don't understand the concept of this texting you talk about. And it's weird because it's like the only interaction that I have is that. And it's like, what do you want me to say? Sorry to hear that. What do you want me to say? Hey, dude, just heard Pete Incaviglia passed away. You know, it's like, oh, okay. Former Phillies, air quotes, great. You know what I mean? Just like, what? I don't know. Weird. That's my little bugaboo. Yeah,
what are you supposed to say?
What am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to say to that? What am I supposed to say?
Actually, every time we do a victory on the podcast, oh, right. So you talk to us about the
what do you want me to say about that?
I listen to the flagship. That would be a better job.
Right, exactly. What do you want me to say? All right. I can't wait till I pass away and they're like, yeah, he was all right. He was, sometimes he was good, but sometimes he was pretty shitty. You know, well, I listen to every fucking show, so I know. that's going to be my eulogy. Yeah, he was all right.
No whitewashing.
No, please. He was all right. That's going to be on my tombstone, I think. It was all right. That's going to be on. Oh, fuck me. All right. What else we got?
Jersey Joe Gotch says, is the PWI top 10 some bullshit or what?
All things bullshit.
5 and Moxie at 8. Do the dipshits that prepare this list actually watch New Japan or what? Naito can barely move. Moxie's wrestling as IWGP was much better. Yeah, it's kayfabe. So relax.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what it is.
What is it? It's like June to June or July to July. And he's been world champion for a lot of that. So it's a kayfabe thing to reflect the kayfabe achievements, and he was in kayfabe the best wrestler in New Japan, was he not?
I mean, yes, some of it. So it depends on who's running the ship, right? So when it was Apter and all those guys that were still in charge, and they moved their offices to like Fort Washington, Pennsylvania, which is like we'll say like an hour away from here, or like 45 minutes, right? And we had to go to the studios. And they did like a photo thing of us and like a whole thing. It was like a dream come true. I'm like, holy shit, this is fucking crazy that we're doing this. And so the PWI 500, at least back then, again, I don't know how it's done now, but like indie guys would give them their bio to be put in it. And it was just a completely fucking random number that you got. Right. And of course, everybody now says, oh, 500. But there was this indie guy, Joe Rules. And it's weird because like Joe Rules, we did backyard wrestling with him first. And then he kind of did indies in Northern Jersey and New York and all. And he got 500. So that was like a big deal. Like one of our guys got 500. Right. But I think like we were like Twiggy was like two, like a high Twiggy guy was like 230 something. And we were above like legitimate names. And we're like, how the fuck did this happen? Right? I just think it was because we happened to have that little photo shoot thing like around the time when they were putting it together. Like the whole story, we made it up right then and there. We were talking about what's happening, the TV show. I don't know if you're familiar with the 70s American sitcom, What's Happening. And we were talking about that, and that somehow that got incorporated in the story and shit. And we were just kind of feeding them like little bits and pieces of like what we would want to see in the article. But yeah, then we gave them like a bio of us. Like it's just like a little thing, a little blurb. And other people on shows would be like, oh, who do you got to contact when, you know, for this? And then I forget the young lady's name. I want to say it was Brandy. I could be wrong. But yeah, you would send it to her. And again, you couldn't be like, I want number 462. Like they just fucking, I don't know, randomized it. But yeah, a lot of times they didn't even have 500 wrestlers, Joel. They didn't have 500. And there would be like a call for indie guys to submit some shit about them so that they could fill 482 because they didn't know anybody. But again, I don't know if that's changed. I don't know what it is. But yeah, I mean, some years it was like it felt like it wasn't, because I remember some years like Masawa was like, it was like Dean Malenko was number one and like Masawa was number two. And like, and then they reverted back. It was like Hogan's one, Austin's two, and Kevin Nash is number three. So who knows? I think they made that up as they went on. All I know is that back then, PWI was kind of going, losing some money. And but I was just happy to be like involved in it. Bill Apter had this fucking photo book, dude. It was amazing. It was just all wrestlers giving the middle finger. Right, so this book was like an encyclopedia, but it was just all like 8x10s of different wrestlers giving the fucking finger. It was unbelievable. Just leafing through that was great. And just like again, just kind of seeing how I remember being a kid the first time I went to New York, and I looked to see if I could find Pro Wrestling Illustrated's offices, and I couldn't. It wasn't like a real fucking, I think their offices were like in Long Island, but I had no idea. I just saw New York and I was like, whoa, I'm in New York. You got to be around here somewhere in this big city. And I just like, I was always wanted to go there. I always wanted to do it. And like, honestly, when people ask me about what was the coolest thing you did in wrestling? That was probably it. That was probably it. And speaking of PWI 500. So they used to put like a gigantic full picture on the last page. I forget what they called it, but it was like, you know, closing credit or whatever. And it was like always like a full picture. And one of them was me, dude, throwing powder on this guy, J.R. Ryder. He's a good dude. And like I'm in mid-toss and the powder's kind of coming out of my hands. And I was just like I just remember somebody like handing it in the locker room. Like they were like, oh, dude, you're in. And I was like, where? What are you talking about? And it's a full fucking page, black and white. And I was like, fuck, holy shit. Still got that magazine. All right, there you go. There's a little walk down memory lane.
All right. Next on the news is Ricochet. Ooh. Quote from him. I already won Best of the Super Juniors. I feel like I should upgrade my goals to the G1 for sure. There are a lot of things in between that I didn't get to accomplish that I still plan on accomplishing. What say you, Ricochet, in the Grade 1 Climax?
Sure. Absolutely. Now, truth be told, I have not seen him. Have you seen him perform in any capacity in WWE?
Didn't we see him at that show in
Brooklyn,
New York in 2019? Wasn't he teaming with Aleister Black or something?
You might be right. I mean, you'll have to Google that. You might be right. Maybe. Okay. So there's one. I don't think I've seen anything else though. So I mean, I don't know. I would assume that he's, you know, just not the same Ricochet. But obviously, you go to getting older, but yeah, I don't know.
They'd replace the character. Same gimmick, but it's a different wrestler now.
Yeah, it'd be great. It's Kanemaru. I would have no problem. Would you have a problem with it? I would not have a problem with it. How about you?
Why not? I'm all in favor of new cool people being in the G1.
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty excellent, actually. And I will say this. I think he almost guaranteed a spot January 6th, or January 5th, right? I would expect him to be there, right?
Oh, I hadn't considered that, actually.
I would think so.
Yeah, I mean, do you think he still has... He would still have cachet with the Japanese fans.
Yeah, he? Especially like returning. And again, I don't know if he's done WWE tours and gone to Japan where people could buy a ticket and see him. But I think under this umbrella and in this ring, I think people would remember and be excited for it. Yeah. And that's the only reason I ask was, you know, if he's not fucking Shinsuke, let's put it that way. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, do we really want him back? Yeah, I would. I mean, again, sight unseen. Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's get into some of the New Japan Pro Wrestling that occurred this week just passed.
All right.
Let's begin with the IWGP Junior Heavyweight match between Doki. People get very upset about my pronunciation of that.
Why?
And Taiji Ishimori, I think that's how it's pronounced.
It's like me.
Yeah, suck on that one. what did you think of this match, David?
I liked it. Here's the thing. Your boy Tajiri Ishimori, he's had a pretty decent stretch here where he's had matches where you could easily, you know, think back and be like, oh, you know, he's dogging it or he's, you know.
No, we fixed that narrative last time. He's good. He's consistently excellent.
Yeah, but you wanted to nip that in the bud because, yeah, I mean, he's been very good. And here's the thing too, though. Sometimes I think like, you know, is it just all injury related and we're unfair? And then, you know, sometimes you can point to other places. Anyway, match was good, real good. Truth be told, I was a little surprised at that Doki got the win. I was actually thinking he would be a little bit more of a transitional, and I was truly and genuinely happy that he did get the win. Like he did pick up the win, what's that?
I was just going to ask if you think this is, we're into a new era in the junior heavyweight division. It feels like we've had, dare I say, like the swan song of the Hiromu, Despy, Ishimori era. And now we're into the era of guys like Doki and Watto when he's back from injury and Akira and Fujita. Like, does it feel like a changing of the guard to you?
I don't know if it's fully, but I will say that they should be thinking that way, right? I think that's vital to keep things fresh and keep things moving and keep things going in the right direction. And I will also say that the guys that you just mentioned, I don't necessarily think they need a title. Like they're already established guys, right? They're not going to take like none of those guys are going to fall from the top of the mix when it comes to the junior title. But him having the Doki having
the, when you say the people I've named, you mean like Despy, Hiromu, Ishimori?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I would be perfectly happy if none of those guys ever win the junior title again.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Do you think if they didn't, they would be somehow devalued in your mind?
Absolutely right. Not.
Exactly. So let's make new stars. Let's make people believe that, you know, there are other people that can be top guys. I think it's vital. I think it's important. We stress it all the time with the heavyweights. Why not with the juniors? So by giving him wins and successful defenses, I think that only solidifies that. Now, speaking of Kanemaru, right, were you surprised that that was the, let me rewind first. One, I also think that this, and again, we're talking in mid-September here. Did that win pretty much punch his ticket for the Dome?
Yes, I think so. I still think the dome matches Doki and Watto.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But when he got that win, the first thing that popped in my head was, well, again, he's punched his ticket. He's going to be defending at the dome, which I think is
amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
We've got to talk about that and celebrate that.
Yes.
That is very bold and also correct because he's fucking awesome.
Yep. Here's the thing. There are lots of times where I am quick to be like, you know what, New Japan, what the fuck you thinking? And there might be even that here on the show today. But at least they had the balls to do something like this where a guy, once again, we say it all the time when we talk about him. I think people at first, tongue in cheek, liked him, right? He was kind of the ironic guy to like because he stuck out like a sore thumb. But talk about a dude that's made the most of his opportunities. And once again, and we'll say it again, COVID era, like people somehow forget that he was a guy that like made the most of all of that and only got better. Which, how many people can you point to during clap crowd era New Japan Pro Wrestling that you could be like, yeah, I mean, this guy improved. Like, you're not in front of fucking crowds. You're not in front of any clouds. It's clear skies. Like, that's pretty amazing. So, again, it's very easy for this company to be like, well, okay, now the crowds are back, let's you know, thanks for your work, but we're going, you know, with the safe bet. They have it. So I was thrilled with that. I really was. I was thrilled with that, and I was thrilled that he's punched his ticket. So good job by New Japan on that. Now,
I remember on this very podcast back in, I don't know, yeah, maybe it was the pandemic time, singing his praises and saying how much potential upside there was. And it's very gratifying to see it play out. And there's a question here from Lost in Ube who says, hey, they have to do Challenger Hiromu and Champion Doki eventually, right? Look, Doki has 2 singles wins over Hiromu this year. So no, they don't need to do that because they've already established that he's better than him. I mean, with 2 singles wins over him, that's pretty clear, isn't it? But I did interrupt. You were going on to say something else.
No. I mean, I think the point is valid that you made. And but I will say New Japan does like weird things. And again, we'll discuss. Let's pivot toward what I think is a thing that feels a little placeholdery in the sense of I don't think anyone is here to say that Kanemaru is the guy that's going to defeat him. And I say that with a little bit of fear in my voice because New Japan is crazy enough to fucking do that. But okay, let's cross our fingers here. Were you surprised at Kanemaru being a guy that they are turning to as a potential challenger?
No, because they have history, and I think Kanemaru is a great challenger. He's never a guy that I would really expect to win the junior title, but I'm always excited when he is a challenger because he always delivers. So I think it's really good. I'm looking forward to the match.
Do you think that there are other people? Okay, so here's why I say placeholder. In the sense of, again, just like you said, I don't think anybody here is thinking, oh, well, okay, well, this is, you know, definitely a, or at least you're going to be on the edge of your chair thinking, okay, there's a potential for a change here. I don't think anybody's thinking that. So that's where I kind of I'm left a little scratching my head. Now, again, it's a safe move in a sense that you got a guy who's super talented, again, up in age, but still able to go and able to deliver. And you're right, they do have history. But do you feel like, because I do, that this is a little bit of a safe placeholder until we get to the dome?
Yes. I mean, keep in mind that half of the division is injured at the moment. So
good point.
There's that.
That's true too. Yeah. I don't know. I just thought maybe we would have like a, I don't know. I think I'm in this mode of elevating people and giving people opportunity. But I definitely see this, the point of, okay, why waste that opportunity, we'll call it, when we know that we're trying to get from where we are today on the calendar to the end of the year. So I do kind of see that.
I feel that, that maybe there's a bit of a story here with Doggy sort of going through all of his old rivals, you know, people he's got history with. And I think Kanemaru makes sense as a guy that he had previously partnered with. And then the next logical step on that would be, Watto, you will remember when Watto made his debut after returning from excursion, it was Doki who attacked him in that empty arena show.
Yeah.
So it feels like we're kind of going through the history of Doki and some of his old opponents. So, yeah, for me, thematically, Kanemaru makes perfect sense as a challenger.
I just, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not good at remembering these dumb things, but I'm going to throw this out here. Didn't Ishimori have a streak against Doki? I thought he had, like, did I hear that in commentary? That he's like one, like, I want to say like two or at least two or three, maybe even four singles meetings. Cage match that. I could have sworn I heard.
I'm cage matching as we speak.
Oh, look at you.
Here we go.
That's a professional right there. But I could have sworn. So once again, that kind of is like that thing of, well, yeah, well, Hiromu's, you know, Doki's beaten him two times or three times. But here's Ishimori, who's beaten him a handful of times, and they went with Doki. So, again, they're kind of weird like that, where, you know, sometimes they just go against the fucking grain. What you got, Google boy?
So we've got five matches between them.
Okay.
So we're going all the way back to 2020 here. And the first one was Best of Super Juniors 2020, where Ishimori defeated Doki. So that's 1-0 Ishimori. Then Best of the Super Juniors the following year, 2021, where, yeah, he's beaten him again.
Okay.
Then we got Best of the Super Juniors in 2023, and Ishimori's beaten him again.
Ooh.
And Best of the Super Juniors 2024, this is going to shock you, Damon, Ishimori beat him yet again. So, yeah.
There we go.
That is correct. It was a streak.
How about that? I think it's weird that it's all Best of the Super Juniors, too. How about that? Weird. Okay. So, there you go. So, he gets a little revenge. He gets multi-loss revenge and the successfully defense. Again, I was just super pumped that he did. Because, again, once again, New Japan does like to give people no successful defenses. I mean, it's not like that hasn't happened before. And I thought this could possibly be a prime candidate for that. So I'm good. I'm very happy that they didn't. So thumbs up. Nice.
Let's now discuss Henare successfully defending the NEVER Openweight Championship against Hiromu Takahashi, which was a surprise to me because I kind of worked myself into a shoot thinking the direction for the Tokyo Dome is Naito against Hiromu. And I convinced myself that the path to get there was Hiromu defeating Henare, which, I mean, Hiromu has had a lot of open weight matches, but he never wins them.
Right.
So I don't know why I thought he'd just immediately dethrone Henare, a guy who G1 results aside, because G1's always a bit funny, but they're clearly getting behind and clearly giving a push. And a brilliant match.
Yeah.
Like, a weird match. Like, on paper, such a bizarre match. Like, Hiromu against Henare. And I didn't really know what to expect because I didn't know how hard Hiromu would go, because I always feel that the criteria that determines the success of a Henare match is how hard his opponent will let him hit them.
Right.
Because if they don't really fancy it, then that it can be completely forgettable. But if they're a bit mental when they're like, yeah, go on, you could absolutely fucking lay it in, then the matches end up being brilliant. And I think this match was maybe Henare's best match. Like, Ooh. It's up there. I think it was better than all of his G1 matches. And, you know, that's not just necessarily criticism of him. But I just... best Hiromu match for ages, certainly that I can remember. I just feel that perhaps it was the change of power dynamics with Hiromu going up against, you know, huge, muscular, physically imposing bully, rather than the junior heavyweight matches where Hiromu is working this power junior style and he's either going toe to toe or being physically dominant in matches. But just the way he was set up as the underdog and having to throw everything he's got at Henare, I just thought they were great foils for each other.
Yeah.
And I thought Henare, they brought out the best in each other, really. I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one on paper, but I think it was really, like, there was some type of chemistry that, like, really stuck hard with me. Henare's weird in the sense that...
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He doesn't masturbate, no. Henare's weird in the sense that he's not the most, like, he's not a tall guy. I mean, when it comes, like, pro wrestling wise, right? I feel like they somewhat match up pretty evenly physically. Like, I never really got the feeling of Henare is, you know, I don't know, like Bam Bam Bigelow all of a sudden and fucking, you know, Hiromu is Jushin Liger. I never really got that feeling of it, which I was pleasantly surprised that's the case. Do you think this is a transition for him to be full time? Like, I guess my question is this. So he loses, and that's, and to be very clear, I don't have a problem with him losing. But do you think this is going to be a situation where it's like show, where everybody had a fucking hard on over him challenging for the never, and he just fell back into the junior tropes? Is that Henare? Or excuse me, is that Hiromu at this point? Like, is it? Do you think that the company's making a firm commitment for him to go heavyweight?
No, I hope they do, though, because I feel that he is actively hindering the growth and development of the junior division, which sounds like an absurd thing to say because he's had brilliant matches in that division and he's done a brilliant job putting people over in that division. But I think he's done that now. And I think I've just seen enough from him in the junior division. And he's been so compelling against heavyweights that just for the sake of seeing something fresh, I want to see him wrestling heavyweights full time now.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Like, to me, and like, I hate to say it, but there absolutely is a ceiling if you're put in junior. Like, if you're labeled as a junior, there is a ceiling. Like, we see it all the time. And, like, the future for me is him being a heavyweight. I think those lines should be blurred a lot more than they are. I think there are people who can blur the line. And I think some of the more exciting moments in New Japan is when those lines are blurred. That we'll call it graduation process. It's really not a great term, but that graduation is some of the better moments of New Japan Pro Wrestling. If, you know, you just got to let it cook a little bit. I think he could be one of those guys because what the juniors bring is that element of, like, on this roster right now, there are so many guys that are considered juniors that I would have zero problems them being involved in wrestling heavyweights, whether that be in tags, whether that be for a never title, whether that be for TV title, whatever the case may be. Like, I find that to be a lot more interesting. Now, like, one of the reasons why I might think it's so great is because to me, that is a true, okay, specialness, because they do intentionally keep that border up and they do consistently, like, you know, when a junior wrestles a heavyweight, it's a big deal. So maybe that's why I'm so enamored with the idea. And maybe that would lose its luster the more times that I see it. So maybe I'm talking myself out of it. But the idea of him being a junior or being a junior that's graduating to be a heavyweight is so sexy in my head that I'm willing to do it with the full knowledge that it might not be as great as I'm leading it out to be. But I think I have history on my side with all the people that were juniors that made that transition, minus Trent Beretta. We really feel like it was something special, right? And we felt like those people, they put a crown on and said, okay, great things are ahead. So I would have no problem with that.
What do you think that Hiromu and Naito is still the direction for the Tokyo Dome? And if so, how do we get there?
Honestly, I don't think you need anything magical. I don't think you need an angle. I don't think you need – you just need to announce it and make it happen. And here's what I would also suggest.
Do you see it? This is just like a non-title match?
No, we got to go. We got to do this. It can't be like an anniversary thing where titles aren't on the line. Anniversary shows, the titles aren't on the line, right? I don't think so, right?
Usually not. Yeah. Okay. That's usually
it. Good. I'm glad you said that because if it is, I'll be like, well, he's an asshole again. I think you do. I think you got to go all in. And I think that you...
Just so I'm clear, you're saying Wrestle Kingdom 2025, you think main event Naito defending the world title against Hiromu?
No. I'm saying that if he is champion and if that is the direction we go, it's definitely got to be for the title. I'm not saying that I'm 100% confident. Well,
my question is, how'd you get there? Because he's just lost to Henare.
Yep.
So how do you go from losing to the never champion to challenging for the world title?
Well, I'll ask you this. How does Zach go from this fucking G1 win and all ships ablazing, and then he loses in a fucking tag match against Sonata?
Okay, we have
right?
questions about
okay,
that.
Okay,
that's a separate thing. Like, we will come on to talk that, but short answer to set up the Royal Quest main event.
I mean, it just seems like it, that, I don't know, that to me, that was just one of those New Japan moments where I'm just like, why the, of all the people in that fucking match, why would you do that? Like seriously. Okay. So if in fact we're doing it to set up a Royal Quest match, like, is anybody buying tickets because Sonata beat Zach?
No, I think the draw there would hypothetically is Zach as the world champion is coming home.
Okay,
but I am quite I'm bullish on Sonata Zach as a potential main event there, because lest we forget, the match they had on the final night in the G1 block was brilliant.
Yeah, it was good,
and they've got terrific chemistry. So hot crowds, hot hometown crowds, who will be viciously anti-Sanada, I feel.
Yep.
And, you know, think of all those near falls. Would it be beyond the realms of possibility for New Japan to want to put the belt back on Sanada and do Sanada Naito? I don't know. I can't even make sense of it. But there's a, you know, non-zero chance that Sanada wins that. It's probably close to zero, but it's non-zero. But I, you know, as someone who has a ticket to that show, I am into a potential Zach not a main event, because they've got really good chemistry.
I know I'm all over the place, and I apologize, but do you think that fucking rubber stamped Zach winning the title? That loss? Because it did for me.
Yeah, someone wrote that, said, Burning Hammer says, does this mean Naito is more likely to retain because there are more challenges from his G1 defeats like Shingo and Evil for the road to Wrestle Kingdom and Royal Quest? Zach versus Sanada for the world title does not seem like the main event for Royal Quest to me. No, I'm the opposite. I think to me, Sanada getting that pin makes me more confident not 100% confident, mind, because, you know, New Japan can get wacky sometimes, but makes me more confident that Zach is beating Naito.
Me too. Me too. For the reasons that you said, that hot crowd, it's coming home, all that, and it's Sonata. So it's no big, you know what I mean? Like, we can have him look at the lights. Not a problem, right? It, like, when that happened, I'm telling you, I got goosebumps a bit because it was like, ooh, yeah, yeah. Now, I was also scratching my head before that little revelation in my own head occurred. I was questioning it, and I was like, what are they doing? Nobody gives a shit. Like, nobody gives a shit unless Zach wins that title. So, yeah, I kind of got a little excited on that. Now, again, I might be talking myself into a whole hunk of bullshit, but it did feel like, okay, there had to be a reason other than we're trying to sell tickets in London, and Sonata pinning Zach is the key to selling this building out. Well, okay. I think it's more of here's a guy who beat Zach, who could win the title. Yeah, I like that. And I'm sorry to derail.
Okay, let's rewind back to Hiromu then. So, do you still think we are doing Hiromu Naito at WrestleMania?
I do, but I don't think there necessarily does there have to be a title line, and does it have to be the main event?
Right. Okay. So special singles match.
Yeah. Okay. I lean more in that direction. Let's put it this way: do you think that it has to be a world title match for that to be special?
No, I think it's almost better if it isn't.
Correct. Nice.
And I can't really elaborate on that or justify it. That's just vibes.
Right. Well, here's what it does. It eliminates a lot of red tape. If you are wanting Hiromu to do great things, I can't think of a greater thing to do than to pin Naito at the Tokyo Dome on January 4th.
Oh, shit. Retirement match. He should retire Naito.
Here's what it could do. And I'm not saying that it is or it isn't. You mentioned retirement. How about just a long little break for the guy to rest his fucking weary bones? Right? Why not?
Loser leaves New Japan for a bit.
Loser goes on a holiday. Loser goes on a tropical island retreat. Wouldn't that make, like, just logic speaking, wouldn't that make the most sense to have Naito take some time off, see where he stands with knees and shoulders and eye sockets and all the fucking things that ail him, and Hiromu gets the ultimate rub? Woohoo! Oh, get Kikuchi on the line.
I'm into it.
Get Kikuchi on the line. Let's get him in. Tie him in. Third mic. Kikuchi. We got something for you.
Have that one for free. Okay, let's move on to talk about the TV titles. So Jeff Cobb, Yota Tsuji went to a time limit draw.
Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it. Only because...
Should have seen that one coming.
No, but we should have, because eventually it's got to happen, right? You know, I would think you would see more of that. Look, I like the mad dash for it, but again, we gotta keep people honest with that. Like, you can't have something like the TV title, and the thing that makes it special is that 15-minute sprint, right? And if you're not honest with people, and you're ending shit at 13 minutes, or you're ending shit at 10 minutes, or you're ending shit at 12 minutes, okay, every once in a while, you gotta sprinkle in a time limit fucking draw. You gotta keep people honest. So while again, it would have been sweet to have one of the youngsters pick up a nice singles title, put that around their waist and see what they could do with it and make that belt special. I'm okay with keeping people honest. So I know people they can't wait. They just can't wait for, gold around young stars. And I'm in that camp too. But, I think we could put a little asterisk next to it, in the sense of, well, okay, he didn't beat him in 15 minutes. He might have needed 20, or he might have needed 25, or he might have needed 28, but he couldn't get it done in 15. So I think that there is that little thing where he's not as dinged up as, well, he lost clean in 11 minutes, right? It gives it a little bit, okay. A, it keeps us honest, and B, it's not looking at the lights, I'm jobbing myself out. So I was okay with it. And I think the benefit is it stays around the waist. You know, I'm happy with who it stays with. So I didn't feel terrible with that one. I kind of actually thought it was a good choice.
Can you make sense of the future direction? So Ren Narita is now involved, and it looks like it's going to be a three-way with Cobb and Tsuji and Ren. Because to me, anytime there's a three-way and a dastardly heel, to me, that always seems like a vehicle for the heel to win the title.
Right. It's just so shenanigans plays a factor, and I hate to use the word, we're protecting people, but, you know, we could. Yeah, I understand the fear. I get it. I'm never a big fan of three-way matches, period. I always prefer. And we know, beating a dead horse with that. Now, do you worry more about the element of a three-way or the element of Ren being in the three-way?
I just don't know why. I don't know why Tsuji is still in that mix. And I'm just sort of thinking ahead for him for Wrestle Kingdom, where he's been given so much this year. Just messing around with the TV title feels like it's beneath him almost. And I expect it. I feel that the direction is Finlay and Tsuji for the global title. So I'm just not sure why they are dragging out this TV title thing and throwing Ren there as well. Like, why not?
Yeah, I hear you.
I can't make sense of it.
Yeah, right. All the things that have been going his way this year, especially, you would think, right, why is the TV title such a struggle? And again, why are we putting Ren in the mix? And the only thing that screams out loud to me is that, yeah, this is going to be some kind of fucking shenanigan bullshit thing where, you know, and I don't know why. Like, I wish I had a better answer other than that, because I guess my biggest question is, why are they even going in that direction? Why do they feel the need that they have to go in that direction, let alone having Ren in there? So yeah, I hear you. You would think it would be, I don't want to say the TV title would be beneath them. I think that's wrong. Cause it's one of my, if it's not my favorite, it's right up there, that title and the whole concept of it.
Yeah, but this is a New Japan Cup winner.
G1 finalist. Yeah. I hear you loud and clear, man.
It could be a situation where they just wanted to give him something to do. So had him challenge Jeff Cobb and thought, well, we can do the 15-minute time limit to protect him. And then they want some sort of kayfabe justification why after a draw he wouldn't want an immediate rematch. So then the three-way is there to protect Tsuji. One way or the other, it's either there so Cobb can pin Ren or Ren can pin Cobb.
But what don't you think, like I don't want to sit here and say that they have no plans for him. And I don't want to sit here and say that they kind of lost direction after G1 and okay, why would you like why would you even put him in this program? And like if you say, well, we're just kind of treading water and we're okay, the guy just was a finalist, G1. You know what I mean? Like he's, once again, I don't want to say this is beneath him, but like, can we keep up that momentum? Like it kind of doesn't make much sense, right? Like they could very easily just, you know what? If you want to fucking just make a Cobb versus Ren, you know what I mean? Like just do that. Just takes him, Tsuji, right out of the mix when it comes to this title. Again, it's one of those things, once again, where I will praise New Japan till the fucking sun comes up when they do something that hits, and then they do stuff like this, and you're just like, I don't see it. and it's going to be hard for me to kind of talk myself into the path. And someone could explain it to me, but I'm still going to be like, I don't know. That's the best we could do right now, which is weird to me.
Let's move on to talking about the Shingo anniversary match. And I think it was John Carey made the really funny point that in a world of US wrestling, where in world title matches, you have friends who don't want to do wrestling moves on each other because they don't want to hurt their buddy. And then this match, which is a celebration of Shingo Takagi, and all his friends in that match are being absolute knobheads to him. Behaving like worse than they ever do. Like, Shingo's celebrating his big day, all his friends, who are all just being complete fuckheads to him, trying to ruin it. When Shingo's pointing to the camera, he's about to do his catchphrase, and then Tsuchi just boots him in the spine. Naito just trolling him mercilessly, doing the hot tag, spinning him around, spitting on him. Hiromu's making fun of him. I just love that. I don't know why that works so much, but it just such a refreshing counterpoint to the melodrama of US wrestling that this match was very, very entertaining to me.
That's funny, because I hate to say it, like the first thing that popped in my head when you mentioned all that, like, I was like, you know, all his friends were just being fucking idiots to him. I remember one time I went to a party, and again, this was not like, you know, when I was 20, let's put it that way. I was closer to where I am now than I was back then. And it was just like a regular, like, family-ish party, right? And I think one of my friends maybe had, I don't know, like, they just knew it was a birthday party for one of our friends. And the guy fucking decided he was going to get strippers. So these strippers show up. So these fucking strippers show up, right? And we're like, who are these girls? Like, who the fuck are these girls? And it was just the, like, there were like grandparents there and kids. And we're just like, what the fuck is happening? What were you thinking? Are you a fucking knob? What are you thinking? I'll never, they had like a pool and like an in-ground pool. It was a real nice backyard and everything. We're kind of just sitting there. And then the gate opens for they had this like real tall wood fence. Gate opens and these fucking girls walk in and we're like, I don't know who they are, and my friend, I don't know, maybe your friends are. And it was just like, oh my God, what? There's what? And the fact that they had the balls to do what they, you know what I mean? Like, if you say, all right, let me ask you this. If you're a stripper, Joel, and you, all right, you're hired to go to a party. Great. And you go to the party and you're like, oh, this is outside. I got to do this shit outside. Okay, great. And you go in and you see the crowd. Wouldn't you be like, I gotta get out of here. Or, you know,
read the room.
Yeah, we gotta call this in the ring, in other words, right? Right? Right. Everything that we had planned, it's out the window. We gotta call this in the ring. I don't know why. That just popped in my head, like when you describing that. So Shingo got the strippers. That's for sure.
All right. Zack Sabre Jr. has talked about a new member of TMDK joining. Mm. He did make an X symbol with his hands, which X has back. Led to a mass panic that it's going to be Robbie X. Method95 says, do you reckon Oiwa is the new member of TMDK? And I'm going to piggyback that question with another one from Multiverse A says, with Oiwa coming back, who do you want to see him feud with? Will they make him a guy right away? Or will they take their time like they usually do? So I do think it's Oiwa. I mean, I know that is probably the
chalkiest of chalk.
Chalk is chalk, right? We know Oiwa's coming back and that would make sense. He's got a bit of history with Zach. You know, Zach kind of took him under his wing a bit when he was a young lion, if I'm not mistaken, or at the very least was involved in some of the shenanigans when he was deceiving evil with the various costumes, dressing him and Fujita up as himself to trick evil. So yeah, I do think it's Oiwa. And who do I want to see him against? I mean, the problem is that the Rainmaker shot has just poisoned my brain, whereby every time there's a young lion I like, when they return, I want them to get that level of booking, which is never going to happen again. And but even so, when it doesn't, I still get a bit disappointed. So again, I don't think that's going to happen with Oiwa, even though I think he has very, very high ceiling, like bags and bags of potential there. He looks amazing all the times I saw him wrestling in Noah, and well done to Noah for giving him a pretty fucking great excursion by all accounts. I don't know. Maybe he could be the bounce back match for Naito after Naito loses a title. I don't know. I've not really thought this through, but I'm just thinking, what would be a good returning feud for him?
Again, you kind of want to balance the fact of him returning, and you want to make it special, and you don't want him to upstage the leader of that faction who's going on to great things this year, right? But again, you don't want it just to be, oh, he shows up and he turns into fucking Master Wato getting jumped from behind, you know, in an empty building. There's somewhere in the middle, that a sweet spot where we can land. And somehow I think, like, again, not that it's the same trajectory in the sense of, but like, don't you see it kind of being like, if you were to make a chart and drop a pin on where this should land, I think like the comparable would be Evil, right? Like where, you know, it's a return, it's in a big spot on a match, and leads to, you know, solid upper mid card to top of the card on some time, you know, some shows future. I don't know if that's going to be immediate, right? But I think like that kind of debut and that kind of, here's where you're skipping all that work up to stuff, and we're putting you and we're taking you seriously. Again, we're not turning him into Okada walking into fucking, you know, New Japan and taking over. But I think that there is a balance between, I guess my point is this, like, I don't think you'd be doing anybody any favors if you didn't make him at least an upper mid card guy out of the gate.
Yeah, definitely agree. I just think, well, like, do you think he needs to have a featured match at Wrestle Kingdom?
Yes, I do. I do. That doesn't mean it's going to happen, but I do. Because
challenging Ren for the TV title. How about that?
We could do that. I wouldn't have a problem with him in a tag situation, but no, I don't want that. I just don't want it to be a debut of he's just a guy. He's just five guys. I don't want that. I think that, and you're right, Noah deserves a lot of the credit in this. But the idea of him returning to New Japan and just being there, like, it's not like he went to, you know, Mexico, where there's going to be a large portion of fans that, you know, I'll catch you when you get back. You know, I'm not going to watch fucking CMLL. I'll catch highlights maybe, you know. He's a Noah. Like it's not hard to find him. And for him to do relatively pretty great things, you know, I think he fucking needs to show up with a little bit of little steam behind him. So, yeah, I think he's an instant challenger. I do. That's how I would do it. Will they do that? They could. They've done it before. Yeah. So I'm gonna be bullish. I'm gonna be glass half full and say, make him in the mix for some title. Absolutely. Attack somebody. You know, why not? Let's have some fun with it.
You mentioned tag situation there. I had been watching these shows for the Mad Bastards, who were very entertaining. I thought there's very good chemistry between Deckard and Jake Lee as a tag team. And yeah, Jake Lee is now injured. Now, the full extent of the injury is unclear. He is definitely out of the next show on the 14th, the Hokkaido Noboribetsu show. But I really hope that he's able to make it in time for World Tag League, because I felt I could sort of almost pencil that in now of Mad Bastards.
Yeah.
Really should be winning World Tag League. So I hope he's okay. I mean, he's got that. What's that? That's like in December, isn't it? He's got ages to recover from that. So, yeah, fingers crossed he's okay. And I never thought I would be this gutted about Jake Lee getting injured, but I am. I'm genuinely disappointed for him.
Yeah, because that to me, that's the perfect setup for him. Like a nice tag match where, or tag situation where possibly you can cover up a lot of the things that might annoy people about him. Like it's a little bit of a, I don't want to say a safer environment, but you know, you could do a lot more with a lot less in a tag situation. So yeah. I just know he's injured. Do we know the injury?
I believe it was a foot injury. Okay. I'll have to check. Yeah, there is a news article for it on the Medium website. I still cannot believe that.
I can't believe it's still there.
Jake Lee has sustained an injury to his right foot. We'll be unable to compete.
Okay, foot.
He is currently undergoing evaluation. His return date is to be determined.
Okay. So the foot is tricky, especially when it comes to the pro wrestling. I mean, I think on like the first thought is, we'll fucking tape it up and make it. But it's like you'd be surprised how footwork is important, you know, in pro wrestling. And if you're fucked with your foot, then yeah, you're going to be fucked in the ring. So it's not like it's a shoulder, and it's not like it's a, you know, other type of injuries where you kind of work around it. Like a foot is, you'd be surprised at how important footwork is. And even the, like what you might consider small might be decent, but again, I don't know the severity of it. My foot might be falling off. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think anybody would complain if they won World Tag League. We do have a little time. I think he'll be back before World Tag League. And again, I don't know the fucking injury, but I think he'll be back before, because he's a pro wrestler, and that's what dumb pro wrestlers do. They're back before they should be. So I'm going to say yes, he'll be back before World Tag League.
You said there was an undercard match you wanted to discuss.
Oh, it was the Zach match, actually. It was that Zach match. Okay. And we spent a good 20 minutes of it. So
I thought it was going to be the match with where El Desperado was, they're all dressed up as the go-go loser Rangers.
Ah, what are you going to do? You know, whatever. It was silly. Silly gooses. No, it was the Zach thing. Because I just wanted to get if you went through the roller coaster of emotions with that with me. And sounds like you kind of did.
Yeah. It was interesting that go-go loser Ranger things happen after the Power Rangers chat we had. I would love to see some wrestlers doing a Putty Patrollers gimmick. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Anyone who's watched Power Rangers, they were sort of dressed up in grey costumes and had quite scary masks on, and they just went and kind of danced around and waved their hands around. I don't think they ever actually physically attacked. I don't think I ever saw them throw any punches or kicks. They just sort of get up in the Rangers' faces and sort of annoy them and go but yeah, if a wrestler did that, that's money. That is a money gimmick.
That's bringing the dome, right? Yeah. That's selling the dome. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm trying to remember. Did I really watch a lot? I don't think I watched hardly any Power Rangers. I got to be honest with you. I think it was a little old for that. I think I was a little past my prime live action hero spot. I think I'm trying to remember. Like, I remember Ultraman, watching it as a kid. I remember watching. We had Johnny. What was it? I don't know what the adaptation. It was obviously from Japan, and they overdubbed it. And it was a giant robot or some shit like that. I remember that. I overdubbed that. All right, nobody cares. What else we got?
Damon tries to remember.
Please.
From TV.
I did. I tell you what, I did a lot of the walk in a room and why the fuck am I here? What did I want to do? I did a lot this week. I was like, whoa, that boy. Somebody's put the fucking pillow over my mouth and when I'm asleep. Let's end this quickly.
Put us out of our misery. Akira against Takamichi Noku. That was very good. I wonder if we're sort of hitting Akira up for something. So I don't know if he's going to be possibly in the junior heavyweight title mix between now and then, or if this is just sort of tune-up matches to ease him back in. But I thought that was quite good.
Yep.
I'd also like to touch on the New Japan the Japan New Japan debut of Jacob Austin Young, who's made his first few appearances as part of United Empire. And I think he's done really well. He's fitting in. I think he's been good. I enjoyed the matches he's had with the Young Lions. And obviously there must be a lot of nerves coming in and doing that for the first time. But just very surreal to see him wrestling in Korakuen Hall on New Japan World, having followed him all the way back from the OWE days. And just very, very cool to see, to follow someone on that journey and be like, wow, they've made it, because I'm sure he would like to go on to bigger and better things in New Japan, but just, it's just very exciting. I got a real kick out of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about the first trip, you know, you're packing your shit, you know, and he's traveled, you know, it's not like he's, you know, just sat in a 5-mile radius of his house. Like he's a pro wrestler. He's a professional wrestler. But there is something special about that. And no one can tell me different, right? So, obviously he has bigger plans and we all do for him. But you got to start, right? And I don't know. I feel good for the guy. Like I feel good for everybody who makes that first trip. I remember Juice Robinson. And again, everybody was just kind of like, former NXT guy, blah, 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 you know. But even like, it was just like, all right, you know, he's there. And there's a lot of guys that are like that, where it's like, okay, your first. I don't even, do you think that was his first trip to Japan? Or did he work like maybe some indies before that? Do you know? I mean, I'm not going to have you Google it if you don't know off the top of your head. I don't think it's a big deal. But to work with a little, you know, officially for New Japan. I know wrestlers try not to mark out over things like that. But let me be very clear. Every pro wrestler I've ever met or I've ever talked to in real life or have ever shared a locker room with or whatever, like, that's all a fucking front. Because every single one of them is like, oh, that was pretty fucking cool. You know what I mean? If you get them in a private moment, like they don't want to show their cards. It's people fucking do that. You know what I mean? People like have little check marks in their life and little boxes that they want to check off. And I think it's a cool thing and I think it should be celebrated. Now, we'll fucking rip him if he fucks up next week. But for now, he's safe as houses.
I think he'd be a really interesting person to talk to, actually.
Yeah.
I'd love to get him on the podcast. I might see if I can.
Really? I thought we weren't doing guests anymore.
Okay. Yeah, no, good point. Not doing that again. Right. Last thing I wanted to touch on from these shows is some of the Young Lion stuff we've seen from the new guys, the Yasuda versus Nagai singles matches. And other people have expressed this sentiment. So not alone in this, but do you feel that they have already lapped the prior Young Lions, Murashima and Kato?
I don't know if I'm ready to say that. Because tomorrow they could fucking flip the script and away we go. I mean, maybe in some people's eyes. I don't know. I think it's, and truth be told, I don't know if I expect a lot out of Young Lions, especially in the beginning. Like I'm more concerned with, okay, crowd connection, and you know, I don't really look at moves per se and shit like that. I'm going to give you a solid, I don't know. and I don't want to say that it's unfair to judge, because look, you get in the fucking ring, you know, you're going to get looked at and you're going to get critiqued, if that's the word I'm looking for. But I don't know. I think it's too early to fucking judge when it comes to the Young Lions like that. How about you?
Not that they've been bad, but I just feel Murashima and Kato are probably the two of the more underwhelming young lions that have come through the system in recent years.
And
like, not everyone needs to be a world beater, but just they fail to make an impression for me.
Okay. And that's fair. Like there are going to be young lions that you're instantly like, ooh, that's a guy. That's somebody I'm. And it's, I don't know if that is a, and don't take this the wrong way, but is that a physical thing where you see someone that you instantly connect with and then you see another dude and you're just like, I don't have that same connection. And literally it's just, you're just watching a TV screen. But there are people where you're just like, ooh, that guy has, I don't even call it charisma because they're not really showing a lot of charisma, but it's just an aura, a look.
Aura, yeah.
There, I'll give you that. I'll definitely give you that. But I'll say this. I don't think I felt that with any of them. Now, that doesn't mean anything. But if you're asking, like, I don't think I feel it with anybody. That could change in 2 weeks, though. That could change in a month, right? Where they're like, ooh, that guy can really fucking go. And now, okay, now I'm hitching my wagon to it. But I don't know if there's any one guy where I'm like, and I'll give you a terrible example, but like, Sho and Yo, you know, when they were young lions, I was like, these guys are it. Like, these guys had that thing that I felt like, and I'm like, in 5 years, they're going to be fucking headlining the Dome. And blah, blah, blah. You know, not quite right. And a guy like Evil / Watanabe, like, I was not high on at all. So, again, a lot's going to happen. But, yeah, I don't know if there's – like, for you, is there one guy that you're like, ooh, that's my guy?
Yasuda looks pretty impressive so far.
Okay. Like, are you going to go run out in 5 years and buy a T-shirt based off of this performance?
No, that's a ridiculous thing to say.
Why?
But we have to do this. We have to do the prognosis.
That's true, too. That's what we do. That's our job. We have content to fill, according to Chris.
Yeah.
We're content creators.
We're farming engagement.
Yeah, that's us. Right, by the way, we are the worst at that. We are the worst at that, right? Would you consider us the worst, period? Like, not even just like pro wrestling. Like, are we the most?
Yeah, I do zero promotion. I don't even tweet out when we have a new episode.
I know.
I can't even bother to do that.
We are.
We've got like 7,000 odd followers. Most of them probably don't even know we actually have a podcast.
I know. It's great. I love it. I love that. That's it. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I thought that was a very funny thing. Okay, good.
Last thing we've got is to preview Road to Destruction NJPW Battle Line Hokkaido, which is taking place on the 14th. So what? That's this Saturday in Noboribetsu City General Gymnasium. So we're starting off with that special tag match, Kazushi Sakuraba and Tori Yano against Daiki Nagai and Masatori Yasuda. Then we have the Noboribetsu Rambo, where there'll be 20 wrestlers scheduled to participate. And the Bebler says, who should win the Noboribetsu Rambo? I don't even know who's in it. I assume it's just going to be a lot of silliness and local wrestlers. Is it? Well, it says here Tomoya, and in brackets, in all capital letters, Emma. I don't know. That's like someone shouting Emma. So I don't know if that's like a wrestling promotion that is in Noboribetsu, but I'm assuming it's wrestlers from that promotion that are going to be primarily populating this Rambo. Then we've got Ishii, Goto, and Yoshihashi against Gabe Kidd, David Finlay, and Gedo. Then Bushi, Shingo, Hiromu, Tsuji, Naito against Jacob Austin Young, Newman, Henare, Jeff Cobb, and Great Okan. And then the main event is the Noboribetsu City Sightseeing Ambassador Triumphant Return Noboribetsu Sponsor Presents Never Openweight Six-Man Tag Team Championship Match. The champions, Oleg Boltin, Tori Yano, who's pulling double duty on the show as the ambassador for Noboribetsu, and Hiroshi Tanahashi, defending against Dick Togo, Yujiro Takahashi, and Evil. Now, that match looks absolute dog shit on paper, but I think it's going to be one of these weird matches that ends up being brilliant.
So it's just a gigantic clusterfuck of things happening.
Yes.
And okay. I mean,
it just gets so preposterous that it ends up being ridiculously entertaining.
Okay. I'm picking up what you're putting down. If it's going to happen, I want full commitment to the bit. So, I think you're right. And here's the thing too. I mean, do you think Hiroshi Tanahashi is going to go out there and give you fucking 30 minutes of nonstop, Tokyo Dome stuff? I think we're all in agreement that this is what the match is going to be, and it could be wild shenanigan fun. So let's put off our silly pro wrestling podcast hat and let's fucking lean into it. Fine, let's do it. Because here's the thing: if they're going to do it, and which they are, what better show, right? What a better way. Let's do it. I'm all in. Let the bullshit begin.
Just end it there.
All right.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture, and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.